Okay. I see the question, and I'm going to, and being heard, of course, I expect that I'll see some typing here. Figu is not really responsible for other translations. It is up to any and all of us, you know, to facilitate, to get translations in our respective languages. Their workload is so enormous. Let's remember, they're dealing with the original 25, 26,000 pages of the information. So before I go on and continue to answer that, just let me know if you can hear me. Okay. Great. All right. I'm seeing it. Somehow I also have to figure out how I type in here. Oh, maybe it's just down there. Okay. It's really a matter, again, everything is self-responsibility at the core of the case. So those of us that want more are responsible for being proactive and getting it done. It'd be wonderful for, you know, people to come along and fund this. And of course, nothing stops us from contributing money to translation, you know, to official translations, and to even, you know, contacting Figu and suggesting a means of it or asking for their ideas as to how we might go about it. But the bottom line is, Billy and Figu have, you know, put out this information now for, you know, coming on 60 years, starting with Billy. And for those of us that want it, we've got to jump on this and make sure, of course, that it's done right. We have people like Dyson and Vivian and Benjamin, all of whom, and probably some others that I'm not acknowledging yet, but who are contributing in their own way to these translations, as some of the Figu people do, of course, too. So let me know if that is an answer for you, or if there's some other part of that or another question. Okay, so let me just take that question and say, can I possibly explain the meaning of prayer and praying within a spiritual context? I can only give you my own understanding of it. My own understanding of it is, and I'll try to be fairly concise, since there is no God or cosmic waiter running around the sky, you know, taking prayers and requests and fulfilling them for us, we have to understand that, at least as I understand it in the teaching, the proper way to pray, if you're going to quote-unquote pray, is to one's own consciousness, one's own spirit, that it awakens, that it helps us, that we, you know, the consciousness, the conscious personality part of us, to be alert to receiving also impulses, to use that term, let alone just basic awareness in life. One of the things that I notice about prayer and people that program in the universe, pray to God, pray to anything outside themselves, is that there's an awful lot of outputting for something, which automatically presumes that there's something wrong. That in the context of people who pray to a God, the ridiculous part is that who or whatever they conceive of as having created everything that exists, somehow it didn't get it right because their own personal lives aren't functioning just as niftily as they would like them. So the prayers go out, fix this, change that, bring me this, etc., etc. Most of our spiritual progress, or at least half of it, relies on our receptivity, our conscious awareness. Remember, part of the teaching is that we observe our thoughts, our feelings, and the impetus to action that derives out of them. We observe that within ourselves. So instead of things just rolling along, thank you very much, as we are so familiar with them on a moment-by-moment basis, we are meant, or let's say encouraged, to pay attention to this chatter that we generate, to these thoughts that we repeat, to the images and familiar things that we unconsciously produce and promote and act upon, etc. So, pardon if you're hearing any bells here because I'm getting emails too. With the idea of prayer, if we are then to return to the original idea, praying inwardly to our consciousness, to the spirit, whatever you want to call it, but to this to ourselves to awaken within us awareness, to lead and guide and fulfill ourselves from the inside out, then I don't think we can go wrong. Now, I understand that there may be ways to put a prayer out to creation, or so I've read. I don't think it's necessary, personally. I think that creation is demonstrably, for anyone that contemplates it, an ever-perfecting perfection. Everything that we take for granted from existence on up operates according to amazing and immutable laws that if we just start contemplating instead of praying and demanding, we would be having these awakenings. We would see how life, if we fulfill our own obligation, if you will, to learn and to, through trial and error, we would be getting in our lives those things that are truly important for us, and certainly they would account for a lot of the things that we want. I think I'll shut up because I'm talking a lot, and let's see what happens. Okay. I don't know if you heard any of that. I probably didn't have the button down. Anyhow, I was going to say, I don't know a lot about the genetics part of it. I would say that in a nutshell, we come into life with certain genetic conditions. Everybody's got them. So, you know, there's a zillion of them on the planet. What is important to me here is that all of this is about awareness and consciousness. Remember, Billy has said the meaning of life is the evolution of consciousness. So whatever hand, whatever hand of cards here we come in with, and sometimes through life we might even see that hand looks like it changes. But whatever we are aware of that we are playing with at any given time, it is our responsibility, it is our duty to make the best of it and to expand our conscious awareness. Remember, we know very little, relatively speaking, really, genetic conditioning. While there may be a lot known, there's probably still a lot that isn't known. So, like with many things in life, from the beginning of human life on Earth, we stumble along somewhat blindly doing the best that we can. And I really think that it's more important that, as per the last answer, we stay and become ever more conscious in our awareness of every thought, our feelings, our motivations. Try to see our ego in play. It's a necessary part of our personality, but we have to always work to kind of contain it in and let it apply its greater force and energies to things that are appropriate to it. So, as far as genetic conditions, that is a question also that might be held in a certain way in the mind of the person that asked it, as well as eliciting certain conceptions or preconceptions in the minds of anybody looking at it. So we come back always then to this question or to this, this point of view about consciousness, self-responsibility, monitoring the thoughts, etc. Reason and being spiritual. How does it correlate?
I'm busy.
Well, that whole, the second part of being spiritual. Let's remember that there is advice here in the Mitre case that spiritual isn't even something we're quite at yet. Consciousness, conscious awareness. This seems to be, an area in which we are definitely encouraged to put our focus. And in this conscious awareness and in this awareness of consciousness, we develop through observation and through all things that we are contemplating and observing, we start to be able to think and reason. We are, I will put it in a personal sense, I was not raised up in a strong academic tradition. I was encouraged simply to be an artist and creative and a songwriter and a painter. And that's what I mainly focused on for at least half of my existing life, more. That was my identity to me. It was really when I came into contact with the original contact notes, the Mitre material, started to read and study whatever was available, that thinking, reasoning started to develop in me in a way that was it was new to me. Reasoning and practicing reason is enormously important, because we are so conditioned beyond, most of the time, beyond our awareness, and this is covered in my material. You know, the religious conditioning has an impact on the cellular level. Some people are born, as we know, if they're born into very religious families, they're already predisposed to this kind of thing. So to be spiritual, or to be consciously aware, let's put it that way, is practice, and it requires reason. We have to question. So, and you know, how many people even say, well, God bless you, you know, somebody sneezes. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. We have to understand that the conditioning is super deep with us on every kind of a level, and to be deliberately practicing reason and balance and looking at thoughts and deciding, well, wait a minute, that thought, that belief, that thing that I'm running right now, does that really serve me? Is it, I'm sorry, I'll go slower. That thought that I just had, that which I'm thinking about and habitually then acting upon or conducting myself in that way, is that truly reasonable? Does it make sense? Is it what I prefer? So through that conscious contemplation, as much as we can do it, even while we are doing, speaking, acting other things, we are maintaining that observer consciousness inside ourselves. And more shifting our focus inwardly to observation, this helps us, in my opinion, to develop reason, thinking, logic, because along with the teaching of spirit, the teaching of truth, the teaching of life, all of that is a consciousness teaching. Along with that, and the observation, the teaching unfolds from the inside out. And our observation of the outer world, the observation of nature, of seeing the creation in everything and everyone, this starts to make practical sense for us now. And so we are practicing reason. That is assisting us to make the choices that are more in alignment consciously with what we call being spiritual. I'll stop there, okay?
Thanks,
Mike. You're welcome there. I'm glad that you received some answers on that, such as they are or were. Is or are any of the Sanskrit texts useful for knowing the history of what happened on Earth? And could be known from those texts? First, let me admit to you, I am not knowledgeable, really, at all, in the Sanskrit texts. Let me, therefore, having clearly stated that, say that it may be interesting for those who are familiar with those texts to look at how they correlate with the available modern material. If you're an English speaker, or if you're a German speaker, you have access to far more. And I think there has been some hint in questions and answers with Billy that a lot of things that have come down, which may have a seed of truth to them, also have been pretty well altered or corrupted, or they're misunderstood. Possibly there's mistranslations as well. So I do not know the actual usefulness. I will say that there's such an abundance, even in English, of historical information, which we admittedly cannot prove at this point, but we can contemplate, think, and reason through. Okay? So that is probably as useful as I could be on that. Okay, I see a question. What's the future going to be like? Any good thing or any bad thing? Let me answer the last part first. Any good thing or bad thing? Yes. Go to the next part of the question. What's the future going to be like? Partly cloudy with highs in the low 60s, low-lying coastal fog. Let's see what else is going on. Okay. So what does someone do after being exposed? Okay. To all this material, say for a few years, where does one go from there? Okay. Like, you can't ignore what you've already learned. I'm presuming you mean that, Edward, that way. Well, look, we are responsible for what we do with our the information, you know, that we receive, that we study. In every area of life, this is true. This information is unusual for most people that encounter it. Now, some people feel, oh, that's, you know, of course, this all makes perfect sense, no problem. But a lot of people are going to go, oh my goodness, what is this about, you know? And it's going to impact a lot of people, you know, questions like, you know, what's the future going to be like, anything good or bad? What do you do after you've been exposed to all this, say, for a few years? Well, that's up to the individual. And really, I'm not trying to avoid the question. It means that by going back to some of the core elements of the actual teaching in the case, such as the one that, I've hammered away a bit on here, observing of our thoughts. Remember, there's various sayings throughout history in philosophy, even in religions, in great plays, etc. You know, man or person, know thyself. And this is one of the, you know, great eternal teachings, and it's contained within the Meyer material. We need to know ourselves, and as we study or peruse material, what it evokes in us, the kinds of thoughts or fears or concerns, underneath that, you know, is always, there's a deeper thought, there's a memory perhaps, there's a belief. So as we observe, as we pay, you know, as we are receptive to ourselves and our content, but also not just receptive without discernment, we are receptive and we're cultivating and developing our reasoning, as was brought up before, our critical thinking, so that we start to, based on our experience, based on our trial and error, we start to make certain choices about our thoughts. Choices about the material we're reading, what it provokes in us. Now remember, let's say we've got 8 or 10 people that all read the same page or the same book. You can have 8 or 10, clearly, you know, 8 or 10 different, takes on it, experiences with it, ranges of feelings or emotions, beliefs. This is individual. But in the teaching of truth, in the teaching of spirit, in the teaching of life, there are repeatedly and, you know, again, repeatedly over and over emphasized eternal truths that we are being offered to contemplate. So, instead of just focusing, as it's easy to do, on prophecies about the future, are things going to be good or bad, we want to start to see what beliefs we have about such things, what fears we hold about life itself, etc., etc. So use all that you come in contact, all that you're exposed to in this material, and your own self-responsible thinking to choose for yourself how and where you go, and link up with people of like mind without abandoning your individuality to find the preferred directions. I'm going to release this talk button in a second. I'm going to contemplate this question and then come back with it in case there's anything that wasn't clear about that. Should I wait to answer that question? It's up in front of me right now. So unless I see James, inserting something else, I'm going to answer this question of, okay, thanks, James. Do you feel you were predisposed to help Billy in his mission, or he just used good judgment? I have to laugh about that. I'm wondering sometimes, did he use good judgment? Okay. Certainly the first time I saw Billy's book, the photo book put out by Genesis 3, the colored photos, I felt a strong sense that this was authentic. I had, ever since I was a child, dreams of lights in the sky, moving objects, discs, a sense of that these discs, if you stood underneath it, you could see it rotate from the bottom. There were just things I sensed about that. Okay. As I became more and more familiar with the material, I felt more and more drawn to it. It resonated more and more with me. So it was an affinity that was developing in me that, you know, led me forward to keep deepening my involvement, which initially, apart from having, you know, gotten a hold of the first 1,800 pages of the contact notes, contact reports, and read them in 1986. It was then shortly thereafter I met Randy Winters, with whom I co-produced the Pleiadian Connection videotape, and I was Randy's entertainment at his presentations. I used to come and do my New Age comedy and New Age comedy songs as the opening act, and then I would sit down with everyone else and I would watch Randy present his information on the Meyer case. What got me to start standing up and doing my own presentations, thank you, Edward, is that I started to say, wait a minute, I don't recall that being in the material or that being in the material that way. Where's Randy getting that from? And let me just say this because, you know, Randy is occasionally a topic of discussion. I thought Randy was a good guy and an incredibly good presenter. But it was that he was taking liberties, in my perception, with the material that impelled me to want to simply go out and make presentations on the information as I understood it, as I found it to exist in the material that had, you know, fallen into my hands. So that developed, and that was part of this whole thing. And so to really to answer the question, I don't know about predisposed, if it's the right word, but as once I became familiar with this, it just ever unfolded and deepened, and it continues to grow that I want to support this work. And that I will say this, and I don't usually talk about it, that the first time, I'll just tell, if I may, I want to what happened the first time I met you, and in person, and this was in 2000. And I'd gone to Switzerland. I had just become a passive member. I had just prior to that, a few months, joined a study group in LA because I was doing everything on my own. And I joined a little study group in LA that Mark Giuliano was heading up at the time, I believe. And what I did was arranged to go to Switzerland. I met Mark Campbell online. We arranged to meet each other. I think it may have been in New York or airport, Atlanta. I don't remember where it was. And we flew in together on that second leg of each of our flights to Switzerland. And I know that we got a car, drove in, and I think we went straight away to the center. We marched up the road, and as we approached the front door, Billy popped out. Just out of nowhere, seemingly. Whoop, there's Billy. And Mark extended his hand, and Mark's a Texan, and he's kind of a character. If any of you follow him on the forum, he's just he's a hoot. So he extends his hand, he says to him, Billy, I just want to thank you on behalf of all humanity. And he was about to launch into a lengthy thing there, and Billy just shook his hand and said, Mark, don't mention it, it's my duty. And off he went. He had some books under his, you know, the upper left arm, all that's left, and was going off to do something. And that struck me because I, my friend, through a lot of my early travails in the 60s and 70s in my life, was a book called The I Ching, which I had the misfortune of memorizing. So I was an I Ching addict for a long time. But what I loved about it especially was that it had a sense of duty about it, that it emphasized that the in this kind of Taoist Confucianist philosophy blend, that the highest good was for one to be without blame, that is, that they should fulfill their duty, which is something that one can only really know from the inside out, not just given to you. Although, if you have an external duty and you take it on, you accept it, and you fulfill it, that's a wonderful thing, too, that, in that context. Now, when Billy said that, I just really thought, wow, that here's the guy that is embodying that for sure. All right, second moment when I personally meet Billy was where, and I will get to the next question in a second, Benjamin, I just want to finish this. It was the next day or something, he was standing out there, I think, with Bernadette talking about something, and he called me over and he said, do you know something about this person in America who's doing this work or something? And I was answering his question, standing about a foot, foot and a half from Billy, looking at him eye to eye pretty much. And while my mouth was, you know, going and I was answering the question, I had this awareness inside that, that this guy, he kind of knows me from the inside out in the strangest way. I've never experienced this before, and I'm having this awareness. And I don't need to do or be anything. There's nothing to defend or project or try to impress or hide. It's just, this is the most unusual experience I've ever had with a person because it's so clean. And it was that neutrality of Billy's. He doesn't project anything. He's not giving you a guru smile. What? He's not grinning at you like the Cheshire Cat, you know. And he doesn't fold his arms and scowl and tilt his head askance and lift one eyebrow when he speaks. He's present. And I see this with everybody. It doesn't mean he doesn't react to things. It means that he seems to really be able to be neutrally present with each human being and then interact from them. It's never left me, that feeling. I've never felt that kind of a safety with a human being, meeting them for the first time, where there were no demands from my ego, from the other person, anything else. It was so clean. That was always remained with me. So predisposed, I don't know, but this has been my experience so far. If I'm correct, all the prophets from the Milky Demon lineages had terrestrial biological fathers. Do you know why Emmanuel had them? No, I don't know why he would have had the extraterrestrial biological father. People theorize about this online. They say he needed those genes or this or that or the other thing. I don't know. I think it's something better in terms of the use of our time. It might be better for the online discussion, and perhaps we would get an answer from Billy on the questions or from Christian or somebody, and it would be much, much more accurate than anything I could bother to conjecture about, okay? I'll release this in case anybody's talking while I read this other question myself and then come back. Okay. Now, about this question about reincarnation, how long does it take? I think that we have been told in the material, there's a lot to remember here, so I'm going to, you know, I get stuff wrong, but I'll get corrected. It used to be that the standard reincarnational thing was like 1.5 times the years of the lifetime of the person, but that now it's been significantly reduced, something like 50 or so, more or less, I understand, based on overpopulation. That's actually all I really know about it. That's pretty much what's available, you know, what we've read. I haven't spoken much about it when I go to Switzerland. I haven't brought that question up particularly, because I had been satisfied with the written answer that was the information they were giving on it. Doesn't mean you shouldn't pry more. So I'll release this in case there's some more questions. Okay, regarding this, the question on the fluidal forces cleaning, do I know from Billy, is there any way to do such cleansing using things that are available for a common earth person? I think that this was answered a bit by Christian, if I'm not mistaken, Billy or Christian, where this is the strength of your consciousness. See, everything, we're torn a lot back and forth, I think, in our lives, especially people who are at whatever level of interest in consciousness-related spiritual material, quote-unquote New Age, you name it, paranormal, because we look for things, and often quite literally things to help us to do things. And actually, there's nothing wrong with that. We need tools. However, there are, of course, through trial and error, we find out what works and what doesn't work. I won't spend much time on it, but I recently saw this demonstrated with a healing device that worked instantly on one person who knew nothing about it, didn't work on somebody else who was trying to use it for days. So what is all that about? I do not know any specific other things, such as if you are in a home that's got a lot of this kind of force, I recall it being expressed that it's through your consciousness that you can work to overcome it. Now, perhaps other people have offered stuff such as the smudging or burning of, you know, sages or incenses or something. I don't know. if that works or to what degree it works. I think that we can tell very often if we are remaining uncomfortable in an environment or with a given thing, and that we have not seen a shift from the either our individual consciousness being present in that environment, or the collective consciousnesses of, let's say, a family or group occupying a space in which we have these, for whatever reason, concerns that there are these fluidal forces stuck on the walls or whatever. So beyond our own individual consciousness and developing the strength of the consciousness, which is probably the most important thing to do for all reasons and all purposes, I don't know of any specific things or tools for that. So let me look at this next question. The copper question, I don't know. I don't think I asked Billy about that myself. It's, again, this is a good question. You have to frame the questions correctly in the questions and answers to Billy, because, you know, I even said to Billy, I think it was last time I saw him, I said, Billy, I wasted so much of your time asking questions that you can go yes or no to. What a, you know, I've been adult, and, you know, you're such a poker face. And he laughed, because Billy is the most remarkable poker player I've ever met, and I don't even play poker. But you can sit with Billy, and if you realize you're sitting with somebody who's just sitting there like an ordinary, normal human being who's had the most amazing experiences of any human that's ever lived and continues to have them, and isn't sitting there going, oh, I got to tell you about this thing that happened when these people disappeared in front of me in my office. Well, you realize that you're careful about how he answers questions. This is something that we've got a few issues, you know, in development about in questions and answers. So, if you want to know about the chupacabra, or if you want to know about something, for instance, in this next question pertaining to the Admiral Byrd, the Nazi group, the Tool Society, etc., etc., which would be best to be asked directly of Billy, or, you know, get it to Billy through Christian, because I am not, I don't know more than I've read in the same material that most of you have come upon. So to tie these questions in together and to make this point, don't ask Billy a yes or no question. Billy, do you know anything about the chupacabra? No. Next question. You know, well, or yes, I mean, you know, what are you going to get from that? So in the way that even that you've asked this, do you know, is it real or is it some unknown species? Maybe you can even fine-tune that when you ask him, the chupacabra is said to be a certain type of a creature. What is the actual nature of this creature? Should it be real? So presume something in there and ask him and let him shoot it down with, well, it's nonsense, or it's a this or it's a that, if he'll answer it. Same thing with this question about Admiral Byrd. Not so. Let us jump then to this next question about, is there more than one universe in existence? Well, my understanding from reading the material, and I think it will be most of you who may have read this in there, is there are universes upon universes and universes within universes and billions of universes in existence as they define them. So we've got enough right now. We're not dealing yet, in most senses, with our universe. We're not dealing with our galaxies. We're not even dealing with our solar system. We're dealing with our lives right now, down here on this little speck of cosmic lint. And there's nothing wrong with all these greater cosmic questions and contemplating this universe and others. But we have to also, let's say, take this information into consideration. If it's true that we live, quote-unquote, countless millions of lifetimes as, you know, incarnate human beings, we are going to only learn relatively small pieces of the greater puzzle in each lifetime. And we have to prioritize to make sure that a significant part of our learning and our focus here prioritized is in the information and the material that is very pertinent to our actual working, you know, life here, our physical lives here, and to our spiritual consciousness, you know, related evolution and development. So I don't want to speculate anything more about things I don't know about. Benjamin's question about Billy's opinion about the Hemisync sounds, I don't know what their opinion is. I haven't seen it asked of him on the forum. I haven't ever asked him myself. I don't know even if they know about that stuff, because let's face it, you know, the teaching of spirit, the teaching of truth, the teaching of life, what Billy's brought forward, is presented to us as the most significant and highest teaching that is quite ancient. It isn't Billy's possession. It is, he is tasked as the, you know, the prophet for the new time, and was tasked in his previous incarnations as prophets to bring to us. And this time it can remain uncorrupted and preserved, you know, in accurate form, so we can study that. The Hemisync sound tapes are interesting. I've used some of them for relaxation or whatever. I don't know if they have more of a benefit. Maybe they help some people to integrate their minds or something. But again, it's another question that should be put directly to Billy. I would say, in response to the question about potential catastrophes in 2012, you know, about buying dried food and all this stuff, we all have to choose if we want to, you know, prepare ourselves. And not only thinking 2012, I think it's prudent to prepare ourselves as much as we can for any disruptions. And let's face it, most so-called disasters or catastrophes probably take people by surprise. We might think we know, well, 2012, this is going to happen and that's going to happen, but what's going to happen in, you know, 3 weeks or tomorrow? You know, just in the news today, I saw that the Polish president, this isn't what, the same level, but the Polish president and a bunch of other important, you know, officials and dignitaries from Poland were killed in an air crash. They probably didn't expect that. You know, no more than I, if I go outside, do I expect that, you know, something's going to fall from the sky or that this or that will happen. Although living in California, I almost always expect an earthquake, even though I wasn't aware of the last one that everybody felt. But being prepared, physically prepared, is always a good idea. And I was just thinking about it the other day, that I want to review my own preparation for supplies and things just to be responsible. Sure. So just on that post, that other question there about what is really going to happen at 2012, we do have an article up on They Fly, and I think there are Future Mankind, you've got articles there. Whatever we have so far from Billy is up, but, you know, there's a lot of conjecture, there's other scientists saying solar activity. Let's just assume that things are, that we are going into the times now that Fatah called apocalyptic. I think that's enough of a hint that we've got to be prepared for anything we possibly can. My long-term goals, well, let me answer it in a number of ways. I want to continue to do any and everything I can to bring the Meyer material to as many people's awareness as I can, that they know about it, and then from there that they take responsibility if they're interested to, you know, do more with it. It's really pretty much it. There are some specifics, and I'm involved in making films. Some films are not even directly related to the Meyer material. I make films with my daughter now. We're in production on the second film. I'm working on a second DVD that I'm putting together, format as my Meyer Context DVD, kind of as a lecture-mentary on Apophis 2012 and the final Meyer prophecies. I'm pretty well into the preparation of it, and then I just have to convert it into a, you know, kind of a DVD. That is something I'm working on. I'm trying to work on my German. I seem to have resistance to learning it as quickly and easily as I somehow otherwise think I could or should. And one of my goals that arose relatively recently was to do what I could to stop some of the noise that came from the worst of the people that I've encountered in this, Galkorf. Not to stop criticism, but to stop defamation as much as I could, to really somehow do something about the vile and viciousness of the defamation. I'll fill in some things for people who may not know as much as is now known about this. I'll quickly answer this. Human life on plenty of planets, especially since there are 127 billion human beings. Oops. Can you hear me now? Let me know. Okay. I was just saying, okay, everybody's saying, I guess you can. My finger's getting tired holding on the button. Let me see. Can you hear me when I switch to this? Oops. Can you hear me here? Okay. All right. So, Galkorf did these really ridiculous, this undercover, let's see. I'm pushing it. I don't see that it locks. I have to keep holding the talk button, I guess. Oh, how can I lock the mic? Okay. Anyhow, maybe there's a lock. Oh, that's a relief. Ah, thank you. Okay. Galkorf was can you hear now? I'll just hold it down if this works. Okay. For some reason, when I pushed that. All right. Anyhow, Galkorf is somebody I debated a couple of years ago, twice on radio. Then last year, he said, hey, listen, why don't we do a joint project, DVD? It'll be very respectful. I'll, you know, present the opposing viewpoint. You present the positive viewpoint. On the Meyer case, gentlemanly, no name call. I said, sure, why not? And so we were in negotiation on this, going back and forth. And everybody, of course, had, you know, simply said, hey, be very careful with this guy. And I said, I'll be careful, but I'm taking him face value. He says he wants to do it this way, fine. Well, a couple things, he never had sent me a contract, and he wanted to do pre-orders. There were a couple of business things I wasn't enjoying, but I was proceeding with the process. And then in November, I wrote to Switzerland, and I asked Christian to ask Billy, is there anything particularly you want me to, you know about this or do with this Korf thing? And Billy said, no, do what you do. So then about a week later, I got an email from Christian saying, Michael, Billy had second thoughts, so he asked to talk. And what they are requesting at this point is that you stop immediately. Here's the transcript of the contact. And I go, oh, my goodness. And what Pata told Billy was that contrary to the way Mr. Korf was presenting this, his agenda was to create another new worldwide controversy based on lies, defamation, slander, vicious attacks on Billy and the mission, and to use me, or as he said, hideously abuse me in this process as a tool for his doing this. And he went on to say, Pata said, this is a person who is highly delusional, he is paranoid, he is inaccessible to reason. This is, you know, enough, you know, it was a grim prognosis here. I said to Korf, listen, I'm going to withdraw from this because you have not you haven't met the deal here, sending me a contract. You're calling for pre-orders. I don't want people to send me money. And so I tell you what, I wish you well with it. I don't really need to do this. Do whatever you want to do, but thank you, but no thank you. It doesn't bode well for a business relationship. Well, after a few back and forths with Korf, well, I don't understand, and blah, blah. Then the invective came out. Then he started unloading just as Pata said he would. Now, I had Korf that this was said about him by Pata. I let him do all this. And then I said, well, you know, I can tell you right now, you're fulfilling the script that Pata said you would. And of course, there's no baton, there's no, you know, you're making this up. And it only increased more and more to the degree that his website at one point contained over 300 attacks on me and Billy of all sorts, including he published some things that were the equivalent of death threats, and he also sent it to me as an email. And by the way, I don't know if it helps, but if you want to extend this session a bit, I will make more time because there may be more questions, and then I would just let you know when I really have to go, but it's up to you. Okay, so he had this horrible thing, so I found the people who were hosting his website, and I went at it with them a bit, and they first made him take down the death threat stuff. And then I came back to them, and I said, look, and blah, blah, and we exchanged some emails, and then they pulled his site. So it didn't take long. He brought it up again, bragging that I would never find out who hosted it this time, and that no matter what I did, this site was going to remain up, and he was going to, you know, the Billy Meyer cult. And I was, according to him, an anti-Semite. I was convicted, guilty of fraud, all sorts of stuff. Anyhow, I managed, with some help, to find the last, most recent hosting company, and there were two companies involved in it. And the second company, the parent company, which actually was in charge of the servers that the hosts used, if you're following all this took lots of emails and a lot of work. As of the night before last, they pulled that site. And he, of course, may reappear. You know, he'll try and find somebody else. But the thing that's so important about this, and then, of course, there was another contact in which Patak said some more to Billy about it, and that this guy is really psychiatrically impaired. I mean, at that level of mental impairment, and not he would, though he needs it, he would not be able to endure the necessary therapy to get his head straight. So he's a pathetic person, frankly. I mean, this isn't someone to hate so much. So let me just finish this thought on it, and then I'll try to get to these other questions. And again, if you're hearing this, I can give more time to cover these things. But in bringing down Korf's site with the help of three companies, the important thing to know is that he violated the terms of service. Forget that he, you know, we're offended by it, you know, big deal. Each of these companies recognized that what Korf was doing was so defamatory and outrageous that it made them legally liable. It would be indefensible for them to try to maintain and support these sites, because let's remember, everybody has to sign terms of agreement to have their sites hosted. And these are tied into very, you know, appropriate laws pertaining to slander, defamation, libel, that the host companies could be targeted with, let alone any infractions of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and all of that. And in talking to the last company, they let me know there are things that come their way. They even will get subpoenas from the FBI or something. So they don't look for more battles. And they personally reviewed the Korf site. And to their credit, without getting involved in the merits of UFOs or anything else, they just saw how outrageously defamatory it was. So Korf now has been, forget me and Meyer, three, you know, international companies have said no to this guy. That ends his credibility, whatever level that might have been at, as minuscule as it was. He is now, it's simply a crazy artifact in the scene. So let me release this for a second, and I'll look at these questions.
Can you ask them about how medication in another one?
I'd say something about alien contact and ETs medication. And all this.
Yeah,
and I'm going to ask you to think Billy is just an Earthman, we know that. But we also know that he's rather unusual and highly evolved Earthman. Most of you, I would think, know that he writes the spiritual teaching for the Pleiarian and others through that writing. Now, think about this. The greater development that the Pleiarian have over Meyer is technological only. Meyer on consciousness and spiritual matters is beyond them significantly. That's why he writes their spiritual teaching. So, if you had the choice of, quote-unquote, meeting an extraterrestrial or meeting Billy Meier, and I'm not encouraging that either one is important, to be honest with you, what would your choice be? Do you want the people that simply have the nifty hardware, or the guy who's got the consciousness of a lifetime and then some? So to make contact with more advanced beings can be done right here on Earth, because there are always people, and not even people who are, you know, Billy Meier, other people who are very high in consciousness, higher than we are, higher than you are, higher than what we should seek to learn from each other. And if we want the highest source of consciousness, let's find out. I think that you'll find it in the Meier material. And worrying about contacts from aliens is the only, there's a reason. If there are extraterrestrials and UFOs contacting Earth people, there's a reason. The reason is in the teaching. It's not in the phenomenon. So when we ask about paranormal footage of shadows, infrared, remember, there is nothing paranormal. There are only things that are beyond our immediate knowledge or awareness or understanding of the laws of physics or what have you. So phenomenon is the least important thing, including the UFOs and all the physical evidence. It's just not important. It's the bait, it's eye candy, it's interesting, but now that you've seen it, now that you know, and now that perhaps you can accept that, oh yeah, it's real, it's legitimate, well, what are you going to do with that? I was watching a UFO 6 weeks ago with a friend of mine in Santa Monica, broad daylight, high above Santa Monica, hovering in the sky, cylindrical-shaped object, more than likely secret military, but it could have been ET, but so what? Who cares? We've got to get on with that. So, the spiritual teaching, yes, indeed, that is it. The teaching about, you know, consciousness, conscious awareness, processes like that. Randy Winters, I spoke with him, I think, about a year ago. I think he's living in the Palm Springs area. Now, let me say this. I don't know if you heard. I can hang in for a bit more time if there are questions that have not been answered. I mean, I don't want to, you know, drag you through anything you don't want to go through here, but I can hang in a little bit longer if necessary. And I'll make a pitch only for, and that is, if you, we talk about conscious awareness, I have a thing called Standing in Spirit, which is a process that I created in 1990. Some years ago, I wrote to Meier, I sent them my DVD, and I said, look, I do this thing I created, and I teach this. If you don't think it conforms with the teaching in the case, I'll sell it off of a separate site, and because I do it, and I like doing it, but I don't want to have it connected to the case if it's not compatible. And the answer I got back is, please teach this process at every opportunity, and after our lectures and everything, we fully approve of it. It's a method for conscious awareness, for dealing with memories, emotions, thoughts, how they are in the body and everything else. And it's available as a DVD on my site, but it's also available less expensively as a download from the download site that we have linked from my site. Okay, that's the commercial pitch. Let's see. This question here about the brain acids and planting them into another person. Is it harmless for the donor? You know, I don't even go there, to tell you the truth, because whether the answer is yes or no, it's not something that's more than likely going to be terribly important right now, immediately in my life. Now, it might sound selfish, but it's also something that's probably going to be quite inaccessible to most of us from... let me try and we'll see if we can stay in. Okay, good. Let me answer the question about Lee and Britt Elders, and I don't think you heard it. If you did hear my answer, well, I don't think you did. Anyhow, I met Lee Elders in 1987 or so. I arranged to meet him along with Randy Winters in the Phoenix airport. He was going to sue Randy for putting out the Pleiadian Connection without getting permission to use photos. I acted kind of as the the negotiator between the two of them. By the time we were done, Lee had indeed allowed us the use of the photos. That began my association with him. Britt Elders came into a presentation of mine around 1990 or 91 with David Froning, the physicist. This was a presentation that I was hired by the Biltmore Hotel in Los Angeles. There were 450 of their corporate clients who were invited to come and learn about the Meyer case. It was a pretty big event. Froning got up on stage and answered questions and told the people there that he and a group of scientists he worked with believed they'd made breakthroughs in their understanding about zero-point energy from the Meyer case, and they took it very seriously. It was pretty cool stuff. The problem is that while I, for the most part, over the years, tried to always get Lee's permission to use photos and films and things that he claimed ownership of, in the past few years, something's gone weird. I mean, he isn't too well, but he has not that I need his help, but he's been, because he doesn't have rights anymore, but he's been antagonistic towards my efforts and had threatened to tell, not me directly, but told other people he was going to sue me for representing the case and stuff. So he had some kind of a bit of a bug up his trousers. And it's irrelevant to me. He doesn't have rights at this point. And I don't wish him any harm. I think that he and, you know, Britt and everybody, Wendell and all these people, without them we would not have this. It's just too amazing a thing. So they are owed, you know, a great debt of gratitude for it. And I won't put up with any grief from Lee, but I certainly respect their contribution. Okay, let's see. Planetary Mission has some kind of follow-up on Earth. And the other question that I saw before about the peace meditation, the word father is used? No, not that I know of at all. Salome Gamnan, you know, there's a Ben Urda Ganiver, a Sala Hesporona, there's no father in that word. You can put this on YouTube, sure, do whatever you want with it. If the Pleiaren mission has some kind of follow-up on Earth, I don't understand that it does, certainly at least not before 700 to 800 years from now. At that point, we are more on a level of having become real human beings, and perhaps it's even after that point that we have any further contact with them. I don't know. But I wouldn't worry about it yet. We have a few more. Everybody's got more incarcerations here before we worry about the 700 to 800 year period. There is a question about the next prophet of wisdom. I think that what we've been told here is that Billy is the final prophet in this lineage. And let's also just look at this for a moment and be responsible. We have now the Goblet of Truth. We have all of Meyer's material that will, you know, gradually be translated, made available. People will learn German and all that for the prophet. Or is there something else we don't need, know that we need to know? We really have now the responsibility to take this abundant teaching that will take us centuries. Really, this is not something you just read through and go, okay, I got it. This is centuries of work. Why do we think that this has been for thousands of years reintroduced, only to be corrupted each of the previous, to be introduced nonetheless for us to learn? What do I think about the strategy of dealing with critics in the Billy's case? Must we fight them or must we ignore them? Well, I think you may have heard my answer about Cal Korf. Cal Korf represented he was the archetype of, you know, the nightmare, you know, critic, because he was more than a critic. I mean, critics are fine. Critics are necessary, actually, if you want to know the truth. To a degree, you certainly need critics to help people with critical thinking, which, while Korf used that term, he's incapable of. He's not a rational human being. So, in terms of critics and skeptics, you know that on my website you can read the documentation of my interaction with the top professional skeptics, my battles with them. I think that they've been thoroughly defeated. They're very simple. you know, they don't really pose any threat to this. There's nothing they can do. They can't duplicate. They can't show a hoax. And they've tried for years. People like Korf can be ignored to a large degree now. I was advising that we ignore Korf up until about 4 weeks ago when I saw that I had to get into a very industrial strength bit of business, a battle here with Tim. Otherwise, unless something's you know, these people are not hornets about to sting you. They are now gnats, you know, little fleas, even less than fleas. And they are entitled to disagree. They are entitled to criticize, even to attack. It comes that when there's a certain point when people threaten people's lives and defame them and all that, then it's necessary to stand up strongly. Because we're non-aggressive. That doesn't mean we don't defend ourselves when necessary. There's a huge difference. We are more than well equipped to defend ourselves against these kinds of attacks. It is also important that people take responsibility for themselves and think through the skeptical attacks and criticisms and what is put forward in the Meyer case. Okay. Should one share the spirit teachings with their spouse? I think it's better to share it by example through the way we live. In other words, if we can embody the spiritual and consciousness-related teachings, then we don't have to proselytize. We don't have to say, Billy said, you know. And is it possible to carry on a relationship when people are on two different spiritual tasks? Well, if we realize that we're all really ultimately on the same task, and I think the question is more relevant if you find that someone is, you know, diametrically opposed to everything you stand for, what kind of a relationship can you have anyhow? If it's a matter that you have different cosmologies or quote-unquote beliefs or philosophies or study and adhere to, you know, different teachings or whatever, then okay, it gives you an opportunity to learn how to communicate that without feeling like you know everything and they don't know anything. I would say that we shouldn't, you know, we should never use the Meyer material as a weapon in a personal or non-personal relationship. It isn't meant to be that way. It's meant to, you know, uplift and help us to, you know, evolve our consciousness. So how do we conduct ourselves consistent with that, even in our dealings with not only our worst quote-unquote enemies, but our closest, the people closest to us, who can be the ones who really can get to us more than our enemies? Cal Korf doesn't bother me at all. I don't have anything personally against the guy. I think he's rather pathetic. It's sad that someone has invested himself so heavily in negativity, but I'll defend myself against it without hatred or aggression. And that's a teaching you can find in a lot of places. You go back to the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna advises the warrior Arjuna to not hate the enemy. Arjuna doesn't want to go out and slay the enemy, and he is told by Krishna, as I recall from reading this many years ago, look, you are a defender. You go and you defend. Just don't hate anybody. Don't approach this with that anger, and you won't get, you know, quote-unquote bad karma. So it's not necessary to get all messed up personally about this stuff. To whom would you recommend becoming a core group member? I don't think that's something I can recommend. I think that's something that a person has to, they can bring their own request to Figu on that basis. It's not that easy a thing to do. There are specific reasons why specific people end up being core group members. And I'll tell you right now, you may not want to rush into that. It's really intense stuff. This is not one of these happy face smiley groups. These are people that really interact. They sandpaper each other pretty well. My thoughts on Figu membership in general, I think it's fine if you want to contribute that way. It's a nice way to do it. This is not something that somebody has to join in order to learn from. It's another step towards supporting something that you feel, think through reasonably, brings value to people, and you want to assist in that, and you want to learn how to do that and participate and benefit from that. You want to go and work at the center for 3 days and, you know, once a year. Wonderful stuff. What did the Plarin do on Mars? I don't know that they did anything. The Syrians cleaned out any remnants of technology or previous human existence. Ultimately, Mars will be inhabited by human beings from Earth. There'll even be wars between them. Read Contact 251. It's, I'm sure, on Future Mankind. It's on my website. was the planet in between Mars and Jupiter? I don't know if you're asking, was there, you may be talking about Melona, Maldek, Phaeton, however they called it, that is no longer there. It's the asteroid belt that was destroyed when the people there blew themselves up. Once I opened up the Bhagavad Gita, and I opened it up right to that whole thing about the warrior Arjuna and Krishna, and this was before I was involved in any of this fighting stuff. I was the most non-confrontational person you would ever have met up until I was in my mid to late 40s. It was only a business experience where some people were ripping me off, and I'm raising my daughter alone, and I need my income, and all this suppressed aggression and fighting ability came up to the fore, and then it has taken many years to bring it to balance so that what is available to me is the energy to defend and to stand for things that I think are necessary to defend against and stand for, but to not be out of balance, with anger, emotion, anger and aggression and all. Fighting with the truth, yeah. And I like to say, I like to fight according to I call it the Muhammad Ali School of Journalism. That means if you ever studied Muhammad Ali and ever knew what he was doing in the ring, he was taunting his opponents. Your mama's ugly or whatever you say. He's getting these guys all upset and they're getting all rigid and tense and flailing away and expending their energy and getting just rigid. And then as soon as they're in the proper state of rigidity, he would just pop them one, because he was returning their energy to them, and they would go down because it was all his opponents basically destroyed themselves. Now, while he was a great boxer and he could punch, he wasn't the hardest hitting heavyweight. He just simply knew what he was doing, and he used the opponent against themselves. So basically my philosophy is I don't take any of my interactions with people who are opponents personally. I don't even care about what it looks like when we get into slinging there. I have personally met Derek Bartholomew from the IIG group twice socially in party settings, and I didn't have any anger against him. I think he's wrongly directed and doesn't think particularly well, but as much as I could lambast him and tease him and everything else, it's not personal with me. I'm just playing, doing it that way. Yes, about my website. I've got somebody who's recovering from illness right now who wants to help me with the website and get it even more organized. I didn't want it, this will sound funny, I didn't want it to be too slick. I don't carry any outside advertising on it. The ads, what you see advertised, would be stuff that is directly connected to, my stuff. Like we have this online shop now where we have permission from Billy. We're putting the spirit symbols on T-shirts and other things. We've got the UFOs and all this stuff. Because the thing is that if people see these things and they become interested, and they, let's say, visit the website or they look up Billy Meyer or anything else, then they can do their own discovery. And there were two people in Switzerland in the group who were really angry about it, and Billy said, wait a minute, these are my photographs. And Patan Quetzal liked it too. They talked about it. And they thought, what's wrong with that? That's nice. Put it out there. Let people see it on the shirts. Because we have so much negativity visually in life. People walking around all stapled up looking like hardware stores with the metal in their heads and over-tattooed and, ugly slogans and sayings on shirts and heavy metal this and that. So we put a bit of that'd be cute, spirit symbols as tattoos. We put some cool stuff on shirts and cups and all that and beautiful stuff. Get a shirt and let people ask you, what's that? Here's They Fly, go see it. Here's Future Mankind, go look there, And this way we're letting people be drawn in by stuff that's interesting. It's controversial, and it's fun, and don't let my remark about tattoos, throw you in a sense. I tried to start the body art trend in 1963 in Chicago when I took photographs of body art that I did on a woman who was to become my first wife. I couldn't get arrested with it, and then in 67 I started the fad of art that still goes on today. So Now, of course, I have mixed feelings about just how much people use themselves as canvases for other people's work and staple boards for metal, but that's another story. So as for my website, we're going to organize it better. In the meantime, I've enjoyed, in a sense, the fact that I just slammed the stuff up there and it isn't too slick, but we're going to try and make it even more accessible. I do still get an awful lot of hits. I look at which pages people look at. People are looking at the stuff that's up there, so I'm pretty happy about that. Okay, let's see. And what if Patan Quetzal said specifically about you? Is that what you said? Oh, well, they know I'm doing this thing, you know, and, you know, stuff about a lot of people, and that's nice. I just don't want them saying stuff about me like they said about Randy Winters. I call it getting winterized. I don't want to get winterized. So I'm as careful as I can be, and if I start, I send them my correspondence, the things that I get into with people, and the stuff that I was sending back and forth. I'm even involved in a bit of an interaction with the Czech consulate. So I am sending them that information as well, because I don't want to do anything to discredit, to harm the credibility of the mission. So I try to be careful. It doesn't mean I can't make it and won't or haven't made mistakes, but as long as I don't see my name showing up like Randy's did, I'll be happy. Sorry. Yeah, people will go to Mars. It's in Contact 251. Go there, check that out. Venus, I'm not so sure because of its It's inhospitable to human life, and it would require a lot of technology. Why is it that Billy said it's only the isolated ones put more energy into the teachings? Okay. I don't know if what you mean by that is that few people, are you trying to say that there are relatively few people paying attention to the teaching? Well, if that's the case, then it's because people are much more transfixed by the eye candy. You know, we're a phenomenon-oriented world now. Everything is visual phenomenon. Remember, in the 1958 predictions, Meyer said that this time would bring with it people would be just lost in phantasmagoria, in the creation of and fascination with things that weren't real. Well, the Meyer case stuff is real, but because we have such a penchant for being attracted to this stuff, you know, people will stop oftentimes to get hung up on the UFOs. But there are more and more people. You know, I get emails from all over the world about people discovering the content of the case, let me tell you. From places all over. Oh my goodness, I just found this, thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. So it's increasing, but it's going to take time. Remember, they're talking hundreds of years here. I don't think any nation has contacted Billy regarding the letters he sent. There was one response, I think, at the time from West Germany. They simply said thank you, but that was it. So I don't know. James says the word movies here. I'm not sure what that's about, so I'll release this button and see what the question or comment is. Right, phantasmagoria, movies, TV, you know, special effects, digital effects, as well as all these sensational shows that get everybody's attention. Everything is phantasmagoria, in a sense. It takes us, and with, you know, the sports, the American Idol, the British Idols, all this stuff, you know. Why did you have chills run through your body? Well, you know, sometimes I think, I think that when the truth hits us sometimes, or something that we're so hungry and ready for, we get that feeling. I had it in a conversation with someone the other day about something. You just get that chill. You know, sometimes I think people will say, well, it's the chill of truth or whatever. I don't know, but that's possible. Okay, so here's a question. Would a science fiction movie based on Billy Meyer be worth pursuing? I don't know. When you say worth pursuing, meaning, you know, I mean, well, maybe somebody will want to do it to make it worth pursuing financially, success-wise, for the movie, but does it really help the mission? I have doubts about it because of how it distorts, it would by virtue of, you know, fate, you know, fact, distort the truth and the meaning and the message and relegate it again. Now it's in the realm of science fiction and the subconscious people, you know, what I call their subconscious minds. They're going to go, oh, yeah, well, that was just a fantasy anyhow, you know, that kind of thing. I think it's also why Billy turned down 3 offers on movies, you know, that kind of thing. So, shall we consider this a wrap unless there's a real pressing question or two? If there is one or two more pressing questions, let's take them, then we'll call it a day, okay? There's the question about, was it short-sighted by the Playaren to have it only in German for such a universal message? Probably not. I have a feeling that it isn't just the Playaren, probably the High Council. We don't really, see, we have a very filtered view of what we think this is, of what we think this is. Remember, we are, if we just take the information face value, we're at a certain level of awareness, consciousness, development, evolution. These people are thousands of years ahead of us technologically, and probably, as they claim, millions spiritually. While they may well be, you know, the Playaren, certainly physical human beings living on a world and living lives, we really can't penetrate into that and perceive it in our consciousness, what that really is. We can probably imagine some of it. We can say they live in enormous freedom with extremely strict laws. You know, the paradox. What would that look like? They live so long. What does it mean to be able to have a conversation, to be in a relationship with a person, to be married for 500 years? You know, so when we say they decided that it needed to be in German, this was probably very well thought through because they're looking at a long-range thing. Remember, they've written off, certainly my country, America, you know, most of the Western world ain't going to be around looking the same way. There's a reason they chose German. And let's also acknowledge that there are things that are simply prophetic, and we can do something about how well we can evolve our own thinking and try to uplift the consciousness in our respective countries. But they know in the long term that that is the language, the Earth terrestrial language, that best conveys the meaning. And therefore, they're not going to compromise. They're not diplomats. They don't compromise and cut deals. They don't care about making things easier. Even the way I present things is probably far less harsh than, certainly far less harsh than Billy does in many ways. Though I'm not adverse to being harsh, I don't also want to overstep my own bounds in terms of what I am qualified to say. I qualify my things, you know, according to this information they claim, it seems like this or that. I say those things because I do have the perspective that we don't have enough of a real awareness and perspective of the level at which things are going on that are far above us. So we do the best that we can here. People will certainly get to live on other worlds, in other star systems, but remember, wherever you are, there you are, and you bring yourself with it. We are on somebody else's other star system. Do you get that? We are already in space. There's nothing better about being from somewhere else. Where you are is where you are. We are all only in one thing anyhow. This creation, this universe, in its very, you know, differentiation that it expresses and designed for the purpose of its own evolution, we're still only somewhere. And when we get somewhere else, don't forget, extraterrestrials came here. There must be a reason why for millions of years, folks from other places have been coming here. So don't get too hung up on what it will be like when I go over there. It'll be whatever it'll be like when you're struggling with your difficulties somewhere else. So I think to try and run through these questions as they're popping up, the play art lifestyle, I know not only you can read more about it, Guido's book, and Still They Fly, we carry it, I think it's about the best price, and maybe everybody, check out And Still They Fly, we've got it. There's at least 52 million human spirits of extraterrestrial origin floating around on this incarnation, reincarnation cycle. Obviously, all of them are never on the planet at the same time. And again, it doesn't matter, as Billy even, I think, answered perhaps in the last questions and answers. You know, you come in, and what you could have been an Ishwish in the last lifetime, you're starting over, your consciousness is being constructed anew. Here you are, you know, this is it, it's now, here you are, let's go. And that will always be the case wherever you are. The Pleiaren make mistakes. Remember them. They've lost people to accidents. Different things happen. So basically, it's all about be here now. You're responsible for your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions. It's forever going to be this way as far as we are concerned. And the future holds what we create of it now and what has been created of it in the past. And we do our best to keep creating a better future. Let's see, Edward B.J., your question, about names. Those are things that I am not all that knowledgeable about. I know that I was prompted to give my daughter a certain name. I think that there is probably stuff in the teaching about how to name. I wouldn't be surprised at all. So ask that on the questions and answer of Billy and or anyone speaking German, dig into the material for it, or ask where it may be in the material. All of these questions are great. I have limited knowledge in many areas, and I only have my own, you know, experience and limited knowledge based on my, you know, my pursuits and process with this. So if that's it, just let me know, and we'll sign out and, you know, do it again later, okay? Good. Salome to everybody. I'll leave now and go on about my day. And feel free to, we could try Skype. It's great. And, you know, I do return emails, but it takes me a long time. If you're gathering questions together this way, James, and stuff like that, we can try to have this on somewhat of a regular basis where it isn't too often or too infrequent, and hopefully it will help. Feel free, if it seems to have value, to put up on YouTube. Great, and Salome to everybody.